Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Give my regards to the woman who made ya. Give a high five to the heavens that sent ya. I like the way that took a roof, yeah, you got me. Come on.
Welcome back to the Rodcast. It is a Freak Flag, Feel Good, Fake It Till You Make It, Ric Flair, Woo! Football 512 Friday edition of the show. And 512 Friday means that my man Patrick, the Idillionaire, plays jams from local bands and artists, very talented human beings that you have a chance to catch live right here in the ATX. Who are we jamming right now, Patrick?
This is Tamika Jones, and she is playing Saturday at the Courtyard ATX.
Nice. I like that. There you go. My man Patrick always hooking you up.
Do you have a guess where the Courtyard ATX is?
I do not have a guess. I'm not cool enough.
I feel like this is a place venue? You would know. It's a new venue that's in the place of an old venue.
The Courtyard ATX. No.
It is where Cedar Street Courtyard used to be.
Okay.
Yeah, so they're down there on 4th Street where it's at open space and the Cedar Street Courtyard, that's now where that is. So they have now upgraded, I guess, and done and put some stuff in there. So Cedar Street Courtyard is now the Courtyard ATX. I had to look that up. So I saw it and I was like, I don't know this venue. And they're saying it's downtown. And then they say, no, okay. It's where Cedar Street is.
Yeah, no, man, honestly, man, there's so many parts of Austin now. Literally, if I don't go there for a few months, it don't even look the same.
No.
Like, especially parts of downtown where they got construction. You'll go there and you're like, hold up, this don't look the same at all.
This is a parking lot, and now it's a building.
Yeah, so now it's a high-rise condo.
I used to park here, man.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, no parking in the city. We know that. But, it's just a city that's growing really, really fast. But my man Patrick always keeping you in the know of where you need to go see some of these very, very talented folks out there. He also keeps us in the know when it comes to the headlines for the Horn headlines. So we'll get that coming up here momentarily. He keeps us updated, educated, and informed on the big headlines of the day. We will address the Longhorns transfer portal acquisitions and departures, but some of the also possible targets for Texas in the transfer portal. There are reports, shout out to my man Bobby Burton over at On Texas Football, there are reports that Texas could be really aggressive in the transfer portal at the D-tackle position, and that they are eyeing several D-tackles that are in the transfer portal or expected to hit the transfer portal to help bring in reinforcements to fill that whole potential hole on their roster. That would say a lot about the lack of confidence or trust that the coaches have in the interior D linemen they have on campus right now. But I don't think Sark wants to take any chances. A lot of talk about Texas bringing in. My man Bobby Bird said they could bring in two D tackles in this transfer portal winter. Remember, they already brought in Savea. They could bring in two. And Johnny Nansen might be the man to save the day. We'll explain that, too, coming up as well. But first, we're going to get into previewing the play-in games tonight and also previewing a few of the playoff matchups coming up this weekend because the NBA playoffs officially start this weekend. Next segment, we'll go behind the burnt orange curtain. We're talking spring practice. We'll also hear from one of the Texas players, Manny Muhammad. You had Baron Sorrell, Alfred Collins, and Manny Muhammad have player availabilities yesterday and spoke to the media. We got some sound of Manny Muhammad, and I think in this audio you'll see why I like Manny Muhammad so much and why people are so high on him overall as a player. We'll get into that too coming up. We go behind the burn-on's curtain, but first let's let my man Patrick hit us up with the Horn headlines, get us updated, educated, and informed about the big headlines of the day, if you will.
All right, your Horn headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment. Texas baseball will look to get their season back on the right track in their weekend series with TCU starting tonight. The Longhorns are 1-4 in series openers in Big 12 play this season, not winning an opening game since Texas Tech March 8th. But Texas pitching will hope to get a break against a team that has not scored more than 4 runs in a game since March. Texas softball will take their record of 6 straight wins against ranked teams to Kansas this weekend to take on the Jayhawks. Sophomore catcher Reese Atwood will look to make history as she is only 6 RBIs away from setting the single-season RBI record at Texas. In the NBA, the final play-in games will be settled tonight with the Bulls taking on the Heat and the Kings facing the Pelicans. Both Jimmy Butler and Zion Williamson will miss their respective games due to injuries suffered in the 7-8 matchups. Despite the injuries, the Heat are still favored to beat the Bulls. However, Sacramento gets the slight edge against New Orleans. In Major League Baseball, the Rangers withstood a tough first outing for rookie Jack Leiter, who gave up 7 earned runs in 3 2/3 innings. But they won the game 9-7 and won the series against the Tigers. In action starting today, the Astros will start a series with the Nationals with Justin Verlander returning from injury. And the Rangers will begin their series with the Braves with pregame starting at 5:45 right here on the Horn. And that is your Horn Headlines.
Horn Headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment. Come get 0% interest for 48 months on new steel zero-turn mowers and lawn equipment this month at Top Gun. TopGun.net. We'll shoot you straight.
All right, thank you very much for the Horn Headlines there, Patrick. Let's jump right into the play-in matchups before we start previewing some of these NBA playoff matchups officially. On the eastern side of things, the play-in game will feature Chicago at Miami. The disappointing news is that Jimmy Butler, Hemi, will not be available. He's got an MCL injury that's going to keep him out for that matchup. The regular season series between these two tied at 2-2. So Miami with no Jimmy Butler. Also, Alex Caruso is going to be out. He's dealing with a foot injury. So both of these teams have dealt with a lot of injuries. As a matter of fact, I went over the games lost due to injuries and suspensions and personal reasons and load management for every team earlier in the show. Both these teams are top 10. I believe Miami is at 6. I think Chicago is 9th in terms of games lost due to injury. And once again, that's affecting them in the playoffs. But Coby White, I think, is going to be the story, Patrick. He had 42 points, a career high, versus Atlanta in that first play-in matchup. How about that? 9 rebounds, 6 assists, and 0 turnovers in that 42-point performance. That's probably the most impressive number of all, is that 0 turnovers. If he shows up, and they still got, you know, DeMar DeRozan, who's a good player for them too, it seems like Chicago has a big advantage here versus Miami. Now, Miami will be at home, and Miami does play a really unique style that gives a lot of teams trouble. But, man, without Jimmy Butler, I find it hard to see Miami actually find a way to pull out this win against Chicago. But both these teams dealing with injuries could go either way. You said that Miami's still favored.
Miami is still favored by 1.5 in this game.
That's crazy.
That may be home court somewhat too. They are the home court favorites. But yeah, I think, you know, the way Coby White's playing, you know, especially if, you know, depending on if Kyle Lowry's trying to guard Coby White, he could still have a pretty good game. He's going to body him a lot more than he was bodied in the last game. But Coby White still have a good game. I think DeMar DeRozan, this is the type of game he can shine in as well because he has that mid-range game. He just knows how to be a veteran and move around against a team like the Heat that can give some young guys a lot of problems with the way they play and the physicality they play with. But I think the Bulls, just because it's just when you look at this Heat roster and you take Jimmy Butler off it, they're pretty bare bones with Jimmy Butler on the team. Tyler Hero shot 9-for-27. In the game on Wednesday, and I like Tyler Hero's not as bad as some people make him out to be, but you know he has to shoot immensely better in this game for Miami to have any shot in it. I'll take Miami. I'll take DeMar DeRozan and that team to be able to pull out a victory here and make the playoffs. Now that may be the last victory they have, but I'll give them that.
Without Jimmy Butler, it's hard, but you're right. Eric Spoelstra's a hell of a coach, first of all.
He is. So it's hard to bet against Miami in the playoffs.
Because Spo always has a great game plan, and you're right. Their style of play, they play so hard. They bring intensity. They play with a sense of urgency. And you talk about a one game scenario, right? One win in advance kind of scenario. Yeah, it is hard to bet against them at home. So that should be a good game, mostly because both teams dealing with injuries and no Jimmy Butler for Miami. It's going to be, I don't know who's going to step up for them. And that's just, somebody's got to step up and score some points for Miami. I don't really know who that's going to be. That's
the thing. Is if Tyler Hero decides to start playing really big, Jovic is another guy who could be good in the game, I guess. I mean, there's guys that can step up in the game. Caleb Martin, if he steps up. Like, there's players on this team that have stepped up in series in the past, and they could. The Bulls, this really is, though. Like, I know Alex Caruso's hurt, but you have to be able to come out and try and go after this Heat team. I know the injuries. Patrick Williams is hurt, and Lonzo Ball has missed the entire season. Zach LaVine's out. You have plenty of injuries that you can look at on your own and say reasons why they wouldn't. But it's hard for me to believe that the Bulls are not going to put up enough of a defensive effort to really try and slow down this Miami team that just doesn't feel like it's going to have enough offense to get it done.
Yeah. That's kind of how I feel, too. The other matchup on the Western side to the final play-in matchup, Sacramento at New Orleans. New Orleans right now 5-0 versus Sacramento in the regular season. But once again, the injury bug popping up. Zion Williamson going to be out for the game with a strained left hamstring. He was an unstoppable force in that first play-in versus the Lakers. He outscored the rest of the starters on the Pelican squad 40-34. Maybe at 40 points, 10 rebounds. He's the one that sparked the comeback by New Orleans, and you can make the argument that if he didn't go out of the game the last 3.5 minutes, that the Pelicans win that game.
Yeah.
So C.J. McCollum and Brandon Ingram got to step up. They had terrible performances versus the Lakers. They were 8 of 27 combined. They got to step up because Sacramento, and Sacramento's been one of the healthiest teams actually in the league. They've been the fourth healthiest team in the league if you look at injuries and games lost. They still got Keegan Murray, who was awesome versus the Lakers, 32 points, 8 three-pointers. Sabonis, De'Aaron Fox. I mean, they got their core and their big three still with no Zion for New Orleans. They're going to need Brandon Ingram, guys like C.J. McCollum, somebody to have almost a career night to step up in his absence.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, Malik Monk and Kevin Herter for Sacramento are big losses that they had late in the season, and they really fell off late in that season. It felt like they were maybe a bit complacent at points and hadn't figured out. They looked really good. They looked like a ton of energy and urgency against Golden State. The question you ask is, was this because they hate Golden State? Because this is an in-state rivalry, and because of the series last year and the stepping on the chest of Domantas Sabonis and all of that, was that part of the reason why they were so chippy and came out with that fire? And can they recreate that against the New Orleans team that maybe it's a little bit harder to create that fire against? That'll be the question you have to look at in this. However, it feels as if this should be Sacramento. They should be able to recreate it. Brandon Ingram hasn't looked like the same guy. C.J. McCollum has not looked like the same guy we've seen in the past. It's depth versus no depth. You know, New Orleans has the ability to throw 9 to 10 guys out on this court. So if guys are not playing well, you always have someone else you can put in their place for New Orleans. If your starters don't play well for Sacramento, you're screwed because you don't have a bench right now. Malik Monk was your sixth man. He's one of the best six men in the league. If Keegan Murray doesn't play as well as he did, where he struggled a lot in the playoffs last season, played amazing in the play-in game so far, but if he steps up, I think Sacramento has enough. I like Domantas Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox a lot. I think they'll come out with that energy and urgency. Mike Brown will be able to get them up for that game as well. New Orleans, you know, they have the talent on the team. If Brandon Ingram and C.J. McCollum want to show up, they can easily get a win. They could probably win by double digits if C.J. McCollum and Brandon Ingram show up. But I just don't know if they are. I can't bet on them to show up anymore.
Yeah, they had to bench Brandon Ingram for the last 7.5 minutes.
Yeah.
Of that game versus New Orleans, which is crazy. But he's the one that was dealing with injuries. Speaking of injuries, seems to be the common theme right now in the play-in so far. Maybe he keeps coming off that with 12-game stint where he was out dealing with an injury. Just doesn't seem like he's found his groove coming back yet. They cannot afford to for him to take his time. He needs to find that groove and find his mojo. He needs to find it right away tonight if they got any shot. And also you got Kian Ellis, who I saw on NBA Today. They believe Kian Ellis, who did a great job is a lockdown defender on Steph in that first play, and he had three steals, three blocks in that game versus Golden State, plus 27, plus minus. They believe he's going to be matched up on Brandon Ingram, and right now he's playing some really high-level defense, and Brandon Ingram is playing some lackluster offense. That's not a good combination.
No, and what's sad is in the West, like I just wanted New Orleans. If Zion could have stayed healthy, they'd win that game. Then you get Zion versus Jokic, which would have just been fun to see these two big guys running. Two big guys with the complete opposite of athleticism. But
yes, seriously.
Those two guys going at it would have been a fun series. I would have enjoyed that a lot. And then you would have had Lakers versus OKC, which would have been so much fun to watch because it would have been old guard versus the new guard. And yeah. Those matches are great. And now we get Denver versus LA, which is fun. It's fun. Yeah. Again, we saw it last year. We've seen it. I don't know how much of a fight there is. And Oklahoma City feels like they're going to be able to take both of these teams that are just kind of limping through this last part of the season. It feels like they'll be able to handle their business, which good for OKC. Man, if you're a Thunder fan, you've been through a lot. So I had to talk to you. I know our friend Tyler Campbell is a big OKC fan. So I'm sure he is thrilled right now that this is that they're playing well. But yeah, it's going to be whoever wins this game, it's you're playing with urgency. New Orleans has the better players, and I know they said 2 weeks to reevaluate Zion. I mean, I would push it up personally if I was playing this series, but you know, they're thinking long term. But yeah, it doesn't feel like either one of them really has much of a shot against OKC. But you know, that's why you play the games, and that's why you want to come out and show out that urgency. You want to see one of these teams really, really want it and dominate in this game and then give you some hope for them playing against the one seed. You'd like to see that on the Eastern Conference too, is one of these teams just really come out and show the fight that they maybe be able to put up against the one seed.
The OKC, getting back to the games lost, they've been the healthiest team injury luck-wise in the NBA. Yeah. A big part of why they've been able to secure that number one seed. Yeah, the Lakers, I don't even know if the Lakers are going to put up much of a fight. I mean, they're not going to get swept, I don't think. But I see this as a pretty lopsided series just based off the sample size of what we got last year. You know, I think the Lakers – and one thing I'll say is about this matchup, though, the Lakers and the Nuggets, if you go look at it, Denver and L.A. ranked 30th and 28th in the percentage of their shots that came from three-point range. If you go look at it kind of over their three kind of regular season meetings, so they don't shoot a lot from three. Whoever pretty much can get hot from three has a really good shot to, you know, to take control of the game early. Jamal Murray, they don't have an answer for Jamal Murray. They don't have an answer for Jokic either. Well, AD can defend him, but and he's averaging like a triple double versus AD.
The reality is everyone on the Lakers to win, every one of them has to have a good game, and that doesn't happen a ton anymore. Where you see AD and LeBron both putting up high efficiency good games that aren't just where they're shooting the ball too much to get those points up, and then you need D'Angelo Russell to play like he's played at points in this season. It looks really good. Austin Reeves to play like that. Rui Achimura to play. You need all of those. Jackson Hayes is a guy that, you know, it's going to be fun to watch him run the court with Jokic not being able to run with him. Aaron Gordon can run with him pretty well, though. It's just, I don't know the counter punches that you can really pull if you're the Lakers right now. But they're going to, you know, they made an effort of it last year, and Denver talked a lot of trash after it. So, you know, they're going to come in fired up, but it's just, I don't know how many, I don't know, I don't feel like there's four games of LeBron, AD, D'Angelo Russell, Austin Reeves, all playing top level. Oh my God, these guys are unstoppable basketball. I don't know if there's four games out of seven that I feel they're going to do that.
Yeah, and they're not like an elite shooting team. This is pointed out from three. You might have a chance to pull some upsets if you just get hot from three-point range and everybody's just unconscious from three-point range. That's not really how the Lakers play. And I think that I'm with you, the Denver Nuggets have too many, they present too many problems to the Lakers overall. Another series, of course, in the West that close to home, which probably may be the most competitive and the most interesting and intriguing matchup of the first round, is the Clippers versus the Mavs. I love your description of it about these two teams. Both can be really dangerous. The Mavs they were one of the more I would say dangerous teams down the stretch of the regular season. They finished the season 16-4. What has really changed for Dallas is their defense. You know, they got great scorers. They got guys that can win one-on-one. They got an electric backcourt with Kyrie and Luka. But the defense is something they've been trying to figure out what their defensive identity is. Since the trade deadline, they got a 111 defensive rating. That is seventh best in the league in that time span. You go look at the difference pre-trade deadline and post-trade deadline. Before the trade deadline, the Mavs were allowing nearly 33% of total shots near the rim. That was 13th in the NBA. After the trade deadline, that number dipped to 30%. That's eighth best in the NBA in that time span. If you go look at pre-trade, Mavericks opponents shot 68% at the rim. That was 28th in the league. Post-trade, that number is at 59%, which is first, actually, in the NBA in that time span. It's the defense that has really transformed this Mavs team down the stretch. Will it translate to the playoffs, especially against high-level elite players like a Kawhi Leonard and what the Clippers present? That remains to be seen. But if it does, the Mavs can be dangerous, and the Mavs can win this series. There's no doubt in my mind. It could go either way. I'm hoping that the Mavs win this series, but if they don't have an answer for what the Clippers are doing, and Kawhi Leonard's health is going to be big here, going back to the injury theme, I think the Mavs, if they can translate that defense, the Mavs got a really good shot to win it.
Yeah, I mean, it's if the Mavs can keep it going, and it goes into, too, can, you know, does Luka become a efficient player, or does Luka become a usage rate player where his usage rate is really, really high, but he's not producing at the efficiency that he needs to. So he's finishing possessions. He's taking the shots, or he's turning the ball over. He's doing whatever else to get that, you know, where he's controlling the game, but he shoots, you know, 15 for 35. That's not a Luka you need in this series. And then the big piece for the Mavs is you've seen two different PJ Washingtons. You've seen two different Daniel Gafford's, Derek Lively's, all those guys, Tim Hardaway Jr., all those pieces around. You know, if Dante Exum comes out and he's able to play in these series, Dante Exum, what he's brought in as a guy who's just disappeared from the league and really thought his career was over, and the resurgence he's had this year with the Mavs, guys like that, if the role players step up for the Mavs, then they can win this series. Because the Clippers, their role players are not necessarily as big of a factor. You know, they have some decent guys, but they just don't share the ball as much. You know, it's really going to come down to James Harden, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, and Russell Westbrook. Those are your four guys. Those, you know, and you basically know how well most of them are going to play as long as Kawhi Leonard, if he hits the court, which, again, nobody knows except for Kawhi Leonard. And so if those guys, you figure those guys will be around average. You figure Paul George will probably have two good games out of seven where he plays really, really well, and he'll play decent defense the rest of it. But he, you know, he'll have some stinkers in there too. He'll have some games where he shoots pretty poorly. So you figure Kyrie and Luka, I'm going to count on them to be pretty consistent.
Yeah.
And I have some sound I pulled from Kyrie that I love, that this is the slogan for Kyrie, for what the Mavs should be, and I know they can't use it. But he says in the audio, he basically says he's talking about playing with Luka and having a guy that you really enjoy playing with. And he's like, it's good. You know, you have somebody who is really positive and the positive experience we have going on. But also, you know that he's got your back and he's someone that'll empty the clip.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, that Mavs 2024 postseason slogan should be empty the clip. Go. Because they had, look, because if you look at what the Mavs did, they emptied the clip to get the players they got. They don't have draft picks left. They don't have really any, you know, commodities left to trade. Yeah. They emptied the clip to get there. And so this is the, hey, put it out on the table. So I know you can't use gun stuff in slogans anymore, which is why we have the Red River rivalry. But
yes, sir.
I would say Mavs slogan for 2024 playoffs should be empty the clip, because that feels like what they need to do.
Yeah, and no, it's a good point because in terms of them acquiring Kyrie and then what they did prior, once they did at the trade deadline, and I brought up the fact that they were 16-4 down the stretch to end the season. Keep in mind that three of those losses, Luka didn't play, and they rested a lot of guys in two of the losses as well. So you're talking about at full strength, this Mavs team has one loss at full strength, right, with all of their available players playing since their March 5th loss to the Indiana Pacers. Like that's so they've been one of the hotter teams down the stretch, and I think it's kind of going under the radar. And you're right, this is kind of it should be all in for them because they could make a run if everything falls the right way for them, or at least get to see Denver in the Western Conference Finals. So
yeah, but that's the thing you feel like this Mavs team is a team that can compete with the Clippers, and if you win that series, you're a team that can compete with OKC. And a team that doesn't necessarily have the experience. They're a really good team. Not taking anything away from SGA, Lou Dort, Chet Holmgren, who, by the way, who had Chet Holmgren playing 82 games in a season this year? I don't think anyone had that. Everyone would have taken the under on that one. Yeah. They have a really good team. And then Jalen Williams that are both good players for OKC. They have a really good team. But when you talk about next-level superstars, we're giving SGA that compliment. But Luka is a guy who can take it over. Kyrie's a guy who can take it over. They just need their role players to play closer to what OKC's role players are playing like. But you feel like they can get there. And once you get to Western Conference Finals, now it's just, you're in a place where you're a lot closer to your dream than you thought you were going to be probably at the trade deadline. This is something, but you have to get through the Clippers first. But again, that's what I say, empty the clip. Every game, every series, empty the clip.
Yeah, I like that. And the Clippers, as you pointed out, they kind of present some of the same dangerous, I think, scenarios for the higher seeds because they do have those stars who can take over games. You got a Kawhi that can take it over. Paul George can take it over. Russell Westbrook can take over a game. Same thing with Kyrie and Luka. And how often is that going to happen where those guys just kind of take over things? That's going to be a fun series to watch. I can't wait to start breaking that one down this weekend. All right, we come back. We'll go behind the burnt orange curtain next segment. We'll hear from Manny Muhammad. I tell you, you're going to like this young man, and you're going to like what these statements reveal about his football character. We'll get into that on the other side. Also, we'll talk about the transfer portal. It giveth and it taketh away, but the Longhorns are eyeing certain specific targets in the transfer portal at the D-tackle position. We'll talk about how aggressive the Longhorns are going to be in the transfer portal coming up right here on the broadcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers coming back on the horn.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And they were all asking themselves the same question. What is behind that curtain?
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Let's get right to some Texas football discussion. My friends at On Texas Football, Bobby Burton and the crew, did a live stream with them earlier this weekend. Bobby said he believes that Texas could take as many as two D tackles in this spring transfer portal window. Remember, they already have Tia Savea on campus, who they brought in via the transfer portal from Arizona at the interior defensive line. But now they are reportedly targeting multiple defensive linemen in the transfer portal. Now, we know about Bill Norton. For those who don't know, Bill Norton is the Arizona defensive tackle who has obviously ties to Arizona and ties to Johnny Nansen, just like Savea did. Both those guys played at Arizona, where Johnny Nansen was the defensive coordinator there and linebackers coach. So there's a familiarity with the system, but also you can vet the player, you can vet the character because Johnny Nansen knows him already. Bill Norton would be a reportedly a graduate transfer if Texas could acquire him. So he's a guy that right now for Texas could be a priority just because of the familiarity with the system, and it might be more of a seamless transition. And you also need someone to be an A-gap disruptor. Now, the problem may not be with development overall of the interior defensive lineman you have on campus right now. It just may be fit. And those guys are more three techniques and not nose tackle, traditional nose tackles. And last year you had two guys that could play nose tackle for you. Byron Murphy could do it if you needed him to, and Tavondre Sweat could do it if you needed Tavondre Sweat to do it. And now that you lost both of those guys, you don't really have a natural nose tackle on the roster right now. Now, Tia Savea, he's great because Savea's a guy that can play nose for you. He has a history at Arizona, of playing nose tackle. So that's a guy that can do it. Bill Norton's a player who has a history of 42% of his snaps were in the A-gap. So he can play the A-gap and be an A-gap disruptor, maybe a true nose tackle. Another player that is out there is Dominique Williams. He reportedly is going to hit the transfer portal. He's from TCU. And Dominique Williams is a defensive tackle. I believe he's going to be a junior coming in because he had 2 years. His two seasons at TCU, Williams registered 10 tackles for loss, 5 sacks, 60 tackles, 28 defensive stops, 30 quarterback pressures, and 3 quarterback hits. From what I hear, this is a guy truly that has an NFL upside and a Sunday skill set. He would be the diamond of that group. He'd be the jewel of the group that you bring in on those D tackles via the transfer portal. He's the guy ideally that you want. If you had to choose one of these guys, he'd be the one that you choose. 6'2", 320. He is actually from Torrance, California. The reason that may sound familiar to us is because that's where Sark is from. That's Sark's hometown. I don't know how big that town is, and in terms of degrees of separation, what would it take to get him to Texas? But he has already planned a visit to Texas. He's going to visit Texas coming up April 23rd and 24th. He's also visiting Oklahoma, visiting Colorado, visiting LSU, visiting Missouri, and Oregon. So he is highly sought after. But like I said, he is the prize. If you can get him, that and he would help you in multiple years. He's not just a guy that's going to be a one-year addition for you Bill Norton would be as a graduate transfer. There's also the young man Jay Toyer, is a UCLA defensive lineman who announced that he was going to hit the transfer portal. He tweeted out, "As I prepare to graduate from UCLA," he's also going to be a graduate transfer. He says, "After speaking with my parents and my family, I've decided to enter the NCAA transfer portal as of last night." So he's got one season of eligibility as well, just like Bill Norton. There's also a connection with Johnny Nansen here, because Johnny Nansen was the D-line coach at UCLA when this young man, Jay Toyer, was first recruited there. So he knows Coach Nansen, because Coach Nansen was his coach, his position coach there at UCLA. So Johnny Nansen's connections, which is crazy, is more than a coincidence, Patrick. His connections alone have brought you Tia Savea already at the interior D-line, but it also could bring you Bill Norton, a player who played under him, and Jay Toyer, potentially. Three D-linemen who all have relationships, prior relationships with Johnny Nansen. That is serendipitous, to say the least. That is a hell of a coincidence and a hell of an added value of bringing in a coach like Nansen.
Yeah, it's also, I'm sure, something that when they were looking at guys to bring in, they wanted to bring in guys that had good relationships with their players. And, you know, you never know when that could come in handy. That, hey, he's been around, he's been to a few different places, and everyone seems to talk very highly of him. And the players that we've reached out to, they all like him too. So maybe if we need to grab somebody from somewhere and he knows them, maybe we can get him.
Now, like I said, Bobby said they could take two of these guys. I imagine Bill Norton and Jay Toyer would be the easiest just because of the connection with Johnny Nansen. But like I said, Dominique Williams is the one that you really want. I mean, like I said, he's the prize. Gives you more than 1 year of eligibility to help you stabilize the position. But also, I think he's got the highest upside of all these guys as well. And, yes, all these guys can play nose. As a matter of fact, Dominique Williams spent 53% of his time in the A-gap of his 477 snaps. So he can play A-gap for you. Bill Norton, as I pointed out, 50% close of his snaps, between 45 and 50% of his snaps are also A-gap snaps for him as well. And when you go look at Jay Toyer, for Jay Toyer, he had 154 of his 383 snaps were in the A-gap. So he can do it too. All these guys, they can be A-gap disruptors for your traditional nose tackles. That's what Texas needs. When you play certain teams, it's not going to affect Texas in like 9 of the 12 games, but they're going to be probably three matchups, Michigan, Georgia, maybe Kentucky, where they'll have the resources and the personnel to be able to run power gap schemes against you. And that's where you're going to be weakest, because you lost Devondre Sweat and Byron Murphy. It left a void there, especially at the nose tackle. That's right up the guts of your defense. And although Anthony Hill is really talented, he's still a young linebacker. And when you run at young linebackers, you test their technical proficiency at playing the position, which is why Micah Parsons, elite athlete in the NFL, one of the best athletes in the league, and one of the greatest pass rushers actually in NFL history already. But when you run at him, you make him an average run defender and turn him into less of an impact player. You can do the same thing with Anthony Hill. And I think that's what teams are going to try to do against Texas. And you play keep away. You keep the ball away from the Texas' prolific offense, and you just convert with 3 yards in the cloud of dust right up the guts of that Texas defense. It's demoralizing, and also it attacks the only weakness of the defense without having to worry. And it actually, if you look at it, it mitigates all the strengths, right? You don't even have to worry about the strengths. It eliminates them. You don't have to worry about the edges as much anymore. You don't have to worry about Anthony Hill's speed sideline to sideline. You don't really have to worry about the secondary, which I think is going to be a strength this year too. So you negate all their strengths by just running the football simply right at them with power concepts. Texas has to counter that. The way to counter that is A-gap disruptors, force run defenders, which is that's what they're working on right now.
And the two number doesn't seem that crazy when you say they've already lost two D linemen. Yet they were edges, but they've already lost two D linemen to the portal. So you'd be replacing two edges with two interior D linemen, and they'd be older, not younger, but you'd still be basically replacing the D line room would still, as a whole, have the same amount of scholarships and people on it.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, you're still deep on the edges, even with those guys leaving.
Yeah, exactly.
You still got Collins Emmons, and you got, you know, Baron Sorrell, Ethan Merck, and you got Trey Moore you're bringing in. You're still really deep there. All right, let's get to a couple of these cuts from Manny Muhammad, which I think are interesting. The first one, he was asked, and I think this kind of it kind of shows you his overall personality. He was asked why he plays the position with such confidence as a young player, right? He's only a sophomore, started at the end of last season. He's going to start this year. Where does his confidence come from? Here's what Manny Muhammad had to say.
I don't want to say I've been playing for a long time, but I've been playing a position since I was like in sixth grade. And I had very great high school coaches. And then, you know, we got the bloodline of corners in my family. But I always want to put God first, because without him, I can't achieve none of this. And then, like, just knowing the game, learning the game, and then that's really it.
I do think that matters, though. I mean, he is seen as a technician and someone who studies the game, trying the mastery of the cornerback position. He's been playing it since sixth grade. He's in his second year in college. He's been basically playing the cornerback position for 8, going on 9 years already.
Yeah.
By the time I got to my sophomore year at College Patrick, I've been playing the position since my ninth grade year. So that's 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th. I've been going on it was 5, going on 6 years of playing the position. He's been playing the position already 3 years and 3 years longer than I was. And the light kind of went off for me in that 7th year studying the position, learning the position. You know, that's why he may be mature beyond his years. The guy, most players who are really great athletes, they end up moving around a lot early on in middle school and in high school, and then they specialize by the time they get to college or later on in their high school career. This guy started specializing in middle school.
Yeah.
That is rare for football players early on.
Yeah. I mean, and I it's also he went to some good programs that, you know, he wasn't just playing the position. He was being taught the position and being taught to learn in a bunch of pieces, where he's been able to spend good years at the position. Not, well, I spent 2 years that was me just playing around, and
yes,
then
exactly.
We got there. He spent good years doing it.
That's a great point. At a high level, against high level competition too. We'll get into that later on. He was asked also where he has improved the most during spring ball. Here's what Manny Muhammad had to say.
I like to work on everything in my game, as far as my area quickness, stand up field on the top shoulder, tackling, my angles, knowing when and knowing where my help is, when I can break on certain routes, when I can play high sometimes.
Ooh, I wanted to play that cut for the last part of it. And he's talking about what he works on. And I love that he mentions, I got to know where my help is so I can know how to break on balls. He's talking about cheating. He's talking about cheating certain routes. I know where my help is. If I got help inside, all right, that means I can jump anything inside. I can jump because I got inside help. So if he runs a slant, I'm jumping it. I'm jumping routes. That's basically what he's talking about without saying it. Love the way he thinks. That's a cerebral player. Where's your help? Because that'll determine a lot of times your leverage and how aggressive you can be. Ooh, man. The more I listen to Manny, the more I like him. He was asked also about Jonte Cook and their relationship. I remember CJ Vogel asked this, and he was asked about him and Jonte Cook. They knew each other, really good friends in high school, but now as teammates, how they help each other improve their game.
I mean, during practice, we'll be talking to each other like, what did I do wrong right here? Like, if he'll beat me, he'll be like, you should have did this better. Or if I win on a rep, I'll be like, you should have did this better. This is how you could have got me right here. And then after practice, we'll do the same thing, and then just laugh about it. And then we'll watch tape together, like when we go in the cold tub and the hot tubs.
That is important. Like I said, I remember those sessions against guys like Shanahan and Sims and Bo Scaife and my man Montrell Flowers were all played offense, and they would win a rep or I'd win a rep, and then there would be a conversation immediately after, like, hey, man, you know, if you'd have looked me off just say half a second longer, that I would have turned my hips the other way. Or if you'd have given me another stutter step here, you'd have been able to create more separation. That's about winning the individual chess match within the game, and I'm glad those guys are doing it. I heard Jalen Ford talking about that with Malik Murphy last season. That should be happening on the lowest levels, not only with coaches and players, but also player to player. Speaking of player to player, he was asked about Makuba and what Makuba has done as a new addition to the secondary. Here is Malik Muhammad.
Makuba has came along really well. I think he's going to be a big player for us in a back end. He communicates well, and then sometimes when he's such a bet, sometimes when someone does something wrong, he'll make them right.
Oh, I love the last part of that. When somebody's wrong, he makes them right. I remember those veterans. Ahmad Brooks was like that, a former cornerback. Former quarterback, actually, who played cornerback and then safety. And he would see, like, a linebacker about to bust a coverage or a linebacker not about to drop to the right depth. And either he would correct it beforehand and try to make sure beforehand that he would warn the linebacker, hey, man, just so you know, you got to drop back. You got 12 yards depth, you got to drop back. You got to be there for that curl route. Or afterwards, he would understand, all right, after the ball snapped, I see that linebacker cheating. He doesn't even recognize that he's supposed to shift or bump the coverage. All right, I understand. I will take care of my responsibility, but still cover his behind just in case there is a coverage bust. Got to have those kind of guys, and Makuba seems to be one of those kind of guys. Last cut here, he was also asked, you know, what excites you most about this young secondary? Here's what Malik Muhammad had to say.
The depth, us being young but old at the same time. We got physical, like, guys that can fly around, make plays on the ball. All that, yeah.
I love that. Yeah, young and old at the same time. Young guys who played a lot, old souls. I like the way that Manny Muhammad talks about football. All right, we come back. We got off the record on the other side. Got some funny audio that we'll play for you guys. The GM for the Jaguars is going viral for all the wrong reasons, but funny reasons. We'll talk about that when we come back. All of that and more right here on the Rodcast, featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers, coming back on the horn.
DD Mega Doodoo, I'm sorry, Mangoodoo.
Once it's turned on, the sign will spell out Deli Cat Essen.
Well, I don't get a break my head comb.
Well, congratulations. Continue good sex in the Big East. Thank you, Jimmy.
And boom goes the dynamite.
It's time for another edition of Off the Record.
Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. And thing sucks.
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. We'll get right to it. I know we're up against it here. So, far off the record, got a couple of pieces of audio here. The first one comes from the Kelce Brothers podcast that they do. So, apparently, Jason Kelce lost his Super Bowl ring. He talks about it on the New Heights podcast. I'll just let him tell you the story.
After that event, and we went right to Jason Lost His Ring, where we had a full vat of Skyline Chili. God. This is actually technically a three-way. It's not just Skyline Chili. There's spaghetti in there, cheese, and chili. The video does not do justice just how disgusting this was.
I had to get away from that corner.
I went to Skyline twice over the weekend. I love Skyline chili. This chili had been sitting out for like some time period.
It smelled so bad in that part of the arena.
Mixed into that chili were socks with make-believe rings, and then there's actually only one real ring in there, which was my Super Bowl ring, that they had to try and find. One in each pool. But there was an unfortunateness. As you guys know, this game existed because I continually lose my Super Bowl ring. And I don't even know if Travis still knows this, but I legitimately lost my Super Bowl ring in this event. They could not find it. This is Jets Jake searching through the chili to try and find the sock that had my Super Bowl ring in it. We have still yet to find it.
What did you expect to happen?
I thought that we would just go in the pool and get the ring afterwards.
You're such a f***ing imbecile.
Greg got a metal detector. There's actually metal in Skyline chili. There's traces of iron within the chili itself. So it's an impossible task to try and use a metal detector.
That's so good.
There's probably lead as well in there somewhere. It's just a hunk of metal. I'll just have another one made, I think. They can do that, right?
I don't know, Jason. Probably.
Guess we're going to find out.
Dude, that dude is so funny, man. And whatever he's going to do after football, like, I'm in. Whether it's a simulcast, whatever. That dude's hilarious.
Someone stole that ring, right?
Somebody stole that ring. Yeah, of course he did.
That ring was either never in the chili or someone found it in the chili and just walked away with it. It was like, yeah, it's a real Super Bowl ring. It's Jason Kelce's Super Bowl ring. I'm going to steal this.
And I'm going to say inside job. I'm going to say that, like the fans, I'm going to say it was an inside job. Might have been stolen before they even put it out there.
Yeah, that's you why they can't mean? Find it, because it was gone.
Exactly.
Gone.
It was never in there, actually.
No.
You know what I mean? I think it's something like that. I'm with you. There's no way it was lost. No freaking way. Somebody either found it and didn't reveal that they found it, or it was an inside job taken before they even put it out there to Chile. But Jason Kelce would let an organization even do that. Like, nobody's going to be like, hell no, you ain't put my Super Bowl ring in some three-way Chile. By the way, three-way Chile is a thing? Skyline Chili is
it's a big thing in Cincinnati in the Ohio region, and they're talking about when they did the New Heights in Cincinnati, and they did the fake graduation with Travis Kelce chugged the beer after they were doing a live show in Cincinnati, because that's where they played college. So I think that was the deal. It's a big deal in Ohio.
We're still arguing about beans and chili here in Texas. They putting like spaghetti noodles and all kind of stuff in it.
And then they had cheese. Because I feel like I could do chili and noodles, and I could do chili and cheese, but I feel like all three of them together, I feel like somehow the noodles and cheese doesn't work.
No way it works. Yeah, not that kind of cheese. That kind of cheese they're talking about. Like, yeah, I'm with you. But hey, man, to each his own. To each his own. I ain't gonna hate on it. Okay, last little piece of audio here, and then we're moving on. This is actually pretty funny. So Trent Baalke, who is the GM of the Jaguars,
by some unknown reason, still the general manager.
Still the general manager.
They dressed up as clowns once to mock this guy, and it's like years ago, and he still got his job.
That's a great point. I forgot all about that. You're right. Well, this time he's being mocked for different reasons. Here's the audio of Trent Baalke and why he's going viral for all the wrong reasons.
Still got a couple of days going through. Coach and I haven't sat down and gone through the final board yet.
he just ripped one. And he, you know what? Good for him. He asked manager. He said, excuse me. But he just ripped one right there.
I'm going to tell you, the best part about it is not the excuse me roll on. It's the split second where he stops talking. I'm going to play it for you again. The split second where he stops talking before to know it's coming and not try and talk over it. He needs to focus for it a second. But
I haven't sat down and gone through the final
board yet. He stops.
He stops to fully focus on it, to rip it real good. Oh, man, that is real. I thought that was like some AI-generated hoax or something. Nope, that is real. It is making the rounds there, folks, and it is fantastic. Good for him. All right, there you go. We come back. One more hour left of the show. We'll address the NFL draft rumors that are dropping some players' draft stock. Best players in college football, at least the top 100 ranked by CBS Sports. Rod's Round of the Day, which is spring game related. We'll tell you what concepts and schemes you're sure to see at the spring game. And also we'll dive into some of the other big topics of the day. Another Horn headlines as well. All of that and more right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers, coming back on the Horn.